Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And that makes this Stuff You Should Know. Is your seat okay?
Frank, the chair is letting me down again.
Yeah, he'll do that.
What a jerk.
He recently fell in with a bad crowd, and yeah. I suspect he might be on drugs.
I do, too, from the way he's making me sit.
Yeah.
So I'll lean forward.
He's become unreliable. Who is it that messes with him?
I don't know. Somebody who has no idea how to sit in a chair properly.
That's what you need to get next. Not just your own mic cover, but your own chair.
Yeah, I think it's a Strickland guy from Tech Stuff.
You know, it'd be very cool is if you had it lower down from the ceiling.
That'd
like it was
great.
Stored up there.
Yeah.
And it'd hang like the sword of Damocles over everybody else's head while they were recording.
I would love that.
We'll look into that.
All right.
So, Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a little place called the Massachusetts Institute of Technology?
Yeah, sure. Good school.
Okay, yeah.
Go eggheads.
So MIT's like the hotbed, the center of the linguistics field.
Oh, yeah.
Among many other fields.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Noam Chomsky is there.
Oh, well, that'll make sense then.
And there's another guy whose name escapes me right now, but he recently made some headlines because he, I guess, got a grant and had his house wired with fisheye cameras.
Awesome.
In every room with really high-tech audio equipment, too. And from the moment his newborn son came home to the age of 5, this guy recorded 90,000 hours.
Wow.
The whole 5 years of this kid's life. In an effort to see how language acquisition develops in children.
That's pretty cool.
And this child specifically. It is very cool. There's a really clumsily titled Fast Company article called MIT Scientist Captures 90,000 Hours of Video of His Son's First Words, comma, graphs it.
Comma what?
Graphs it. And then he graphs it? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's so clumsily titled.
The editor was like, I'm going home.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but anyway, there's some video and some audio clips in there where you can hear like this condensed, like over 5 years or over like a 6 month period, something like that.
That's
like
cool.
The kid going from like Gaga to water.
Yeah.
And you can hear it like evolve.
Interesting. Did they learn anything from that?
I don't know if they have quite yet. And plus, I mean, like this is one child.
Yeah, sure.
But it's at the very least very, very interesting.
Yeah.
But the idea that you can learn something about the evolution of language in human beings from language acquisition in children is a hotly contested idea.
It is.
You wrote what I think is a very fine article.
Thanks.
You did a good job with this. How did language evolve?
It was a shorty.
You were talking about, though, not how we acquire language skills as kids, but as a species. How
sure.
did humans acquire language? Because we're the only ones that can say things like this.
Yeah.
But you go to great lengths to point out that we're not the only ones that communicate.
True. I wouldn't say great lengths. It was sort of a clumsy intro.
It was like two or three sentences.
Sure. Animals communicate.
Well, no, it is very true. And I think it was a good thing to start off with because humans can often be very homocentric.
True.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you say birds chirp. Porpoises go, right?
Yeah.
They are communicating, but we're the only ones who can verbalize.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
We talk words.
And we don't know exactly how this evolved for sure, because there's a problem when it comes to things like evolution. There's not a ton of evidence a lot of times.
I know.
Like hard evidence. I read this one guy's paper. There's a lot of papers on this.
Yeah, this is a really... First of all, I want you to just be very quiet. Do you hear that off in the distance? That explosion?
Yes.
We're standing in the midst of a minefield. Linguistics is a minefield.
And they love... linguistics people really love language and talking about it. Like,
and putting down people who disagree with them.
Yeah,
so true. We should tread lightly here.
We should. But one guy's paper that I read today, some university paper, he said that ideally, if we're going to study something like these neurological changes that happen in the brain, mm-hmm. we would have, a large number of petrified whole brains representing lots of species over lots of time.
Right.
But we don't have that.
No.
Unfortunately, there are big gaps.
Yeah. And even not taking into account gaps, we don't have fossilized brains.
Yeah.
The closest thing we have is a fossilized skull,
sure.
which we can analyze and be like, well, there is kind of room for a big enough brain maybe for language. Right?
Yeah, what's that called? Cranial endocasting?
Nice.
I think so.
That's a good term for it.
And people won't even know if I'm wrong.
Right.
What they do have a little bit of evidence on is that the shape of our vocal tract wasn't until about 100,000 years ago, wasn't able to make the vocalizations of the modern speech sounds. So it wasn't even possible. Although that doesn't necessarily mean there wasn't language, because it just could have been a much more primitive version of what evolved.
Of grunts?
Yeah, exactly. And I did see someone, even though I saw this was poo-pooed by most people, some people think that spoken language evolved from sign language, and that our modern gestures are a holdover from that, which I thought was interesting, but most people go, nah, that's not true.
I ran into another one, and what you're talking about for everybody listening is called a proto-language.
Yeah.
And evidence of a proto-language supports one theory, which we'll talk about in a minute. But one idea for a proto-language is that we started talking using onomatopoeia.
Oh, really?
Which would make snap, crackle, and pop like the oldest words on earth, you know?
Yeah.
I guess we should probably get into it now. Like, there are basically two competing theories for how we acquire language as a species, right?
Yeah, and I like both of them.
I noticed at the end, you're like, why can't we all just get along as far as linguistics goes?
Because I'm not a linguist, and so I'm not going to sit here and poo-poo and argue because I'm not smart enough. I don't know enough about it.
Okay.
But the first, Josh, is that we adapted to survive, so we learn how to speak.
Right.
And that's kind of the simplest way to say it. The example I gave in here is, and then we'll talk about who are the leaders in this whole category that believe this. But tuk-tuks hunting on the range, on the plains, mm-hmm. on the savannah.
Yeah.
And tuk-tuk, thunder scares away the deer. So tuk-tuk goes hungry.
Right.
So then later on, tuk-tuk has already maybe learned to grunt about like the deer being nearby to his buddy. Who's his friend? Did we ever name a friend?
Oh, Mort.
Morty.
Yeah.
So he's already learned how to tell Morty that deer are nearby, so shut up.
Right, because Morty talks to him
just incessantly.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden he learns that thunder and bad weather might scare deer away, so he goes hungry. So he learns, now I've got to learn like what bad weather looks like coming in and how to tell Morty, hey, pick up the pace, dude, because bad weather's coming and we don't want to go hungry again. So that was just one of the stepping stones in evolving speech.
Right. And it's kind of like the idea behind it is that the speech evolved out of combinations of these things, like you're saying.
Yeah.
So you put them together and all of a sudden, huh, that makes a lot of sense. I'm able to describe some larger portion of the world around us.
Yeah, in a sense, got more complex. The language had to, like, right. As they learned more things.
Right, like we settled down and sure. Agriculture would have had, like, a huge impact on something like that.
Yeah, and keeping children alive, apparently. Like, once we settled in villages, a lot of people think that language really took a leap forward because we had to, you know, keep the species alive by protecting the kids.
Huh. I guess also the idea that you could warn somebody about something, right?
Sure.
That isn't necessarily just something you could point at.
Right.
And be like, you know, let's get out of here through gesture.
Right.
Something maybe further away, something that you couldn't see right then. That would lead directly to a trait that led to survival.
Yeah.
Which is the whole basis of natural selection.
Exactly.
Which means that people who could do that would be able to go reproduce and that trait would survive and be passed along.
And I imagine reproduction and all needed its own language as well.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, hey, mama.
Although in Quest for Fire, it pretty much just happened.
Did it? I haven't seen that in so long. I think that was the first movie I ever saw on Showtime. And
yeah, there wasn't a lot of words going on. It was like, you know, the ladies are down by the river, bending over, filling up water buckets or, you know, water pods.
Okay.
And man comes along and just, you know, takes care of business.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that an ancient phrase, takes care of business?
TCB, yeah.
So I remember Quest for Fire and another movie were out on Showtime at about the same time. This movie is called Caveman, and yeah. It starred Ringo Starr. Is that whose picture that is in this article?
Yeah, don't you like my caption?
Yeah, that's I couldn't tell just by looking at it, but yeah, the caption I think is what gave it away.
These were the old days where I would like the highlight of my week was writing really clever picture captions to articles. I would go home and say, "Look at this one, Emily."
It's like, pretty good.
Someone might get this joke.
So there's a production still of from Caveman of Ringo Starr standing there, and the caption is, "This caveman gets by with a little help from his friends." Beautiful.
Matt, guest producer Matt Schnickered at that.
Yeah. So that's adaptation theory, that basically we figured out that we could survive better and more robustly by talking to one another, and language evolved as in fits and starts through there, right?
Yeah, and who's
gradually,
that?
I should say, gradually.
Yes.
And that's Steven Pinker, who's a great dude.
Yeah, Pinker and Bloom in their paper, Natural Language and Natural Selection. I mean, there are a lot of people who agree with them and have written, quote-unquote, the book on this since then.
Yeah, or several books.
Yeah. It's very dense subject.
Yeah.
Makes my mind melt a little bit.
And Pinker and Bloom basically say, this is the case. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is just standard Darwinian natural selection. What's the problem?
Hey, everybody. It's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. Hey, everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I don't have a problem with it.
Why doesn't everybody just get on board?
Well, because there's another competing theory, and there are all sorts of sub-theories, but these are the two big daddies. And this is Noam Chomsky and evolutionary biologist Stephen Jay Gould. And they think that it was a spandrel.
Right.
Or an exaptation.
So you know what a spandrel is?
Well, in biology or for real?
In architecture.
Yeah. But please explain.
Okay. Well, Stephen Jay Gould coined the term spandrel, as you point out in the article.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect, actually, in this application, because a spandrel, architecturally speaking, is this triangular area that inevitably is created when you put two arched domes next to one another at right angles.
Right.
And it looks like, if you're looking at it, it looks like purposeful design, like ornamentation.
Sure.
But it's actually a byproduct you can't get around. And that's what a spandrel is, as far as Gould is concerned. It's the product of another evolutionary process, right?
Yeah.
And language supposedly was, as far as Gould and Chomsky are concerned, just kind of came about as the result of other stuff, specifically tool making.
Yeah, Darwin calls it pre-adaptation, and later became exaptation. And
which one do you like more, pre-adaptation or exaptation?
Exaptation's a little hard to say, so I'm going to go with pre-adaptation.
But it sounds so, like, important, though.
It does, actually. You know? But a quick example of that, and this is the one most often cited, is that there's a theory out there that bird feathers were originally meant to keep birds warm, and flying came about after that as a spandrel.
Makes sense.
Sure.
What's the problem?
Exactly. So you said that our brains adapted to where they got larger to where we could make tools and things.
Right.
And language came about because of a result of that.
And this isn't just kind of, I mean, it's not like they're like, well, we can run so we can talk. There's specific areas of the brain that are associated with both tool making and tool use and language.
Right.
And there's actually two. There's Broca's area and there's Wernicke's area.
Yeah.
And Broca's area was named after a French neurosurgeon named Paul Broca. And in 1861, he described a patient named Tan. And Tan wasn't the guy's real name. No one knew his real name.
Was he Tan?
He was the only thing, the only syllable he could pronounce that he could form was Tan.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, well, that's your name, pal. And after he died, Broca opened up his skull and looked at his brain and found a huge lesion on the area now named Broca's area.
Okay.
And that's come to be associated with speech production. The weird thing about Tan was he could understand spoken language. If you're like, Tan, you look kind of tan. I think maybe you should stay out of the sun. He could know to stay out of the sun. There wasn't anything wrong with him other than he could not produce speech.
Boy, I bet he was really ticked off with his name then. If all he can say is Tan, they're like, we'll just call you Tan. And in his head, he was probably like, no.
Right, yeah. It's Ignatius.
Anything but Tan.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine the guy probably was like, half mad by the time he died, just out of frustration.
Well, stroke patients, my grandfather had a stroke and tried to speak. In his head, he was saying words, but it would come out as gobbledygook, and he would get really frustrated. It was very sad.
So now, that was your grandfather?
Yeah.
So what it sounds like your grandfather had a problem with was his Wernicke's area.
Yeah.
And that was named after a German neurosurgeon who found that his patients who could speak, but they weren't making any sense, had lesions on the area now known as Wernicke's area. So if you put the two together, Broca's area.
Yeah.
Which is involved in speech production, and Wernicke's area, which is involved with speech comprehension, language comprehension, you have normally talking people like us.
Yes. And we first saw Wernicke's area I think it was Ricky Wernicke. Isn't that the guy? Wernicke's area and Broca's area. And the temporal, parietal, and occipital lobes of the brain physically connected for the first time in Homo habilis or habilis.
So wait, what was it? What's that called where you examine skulls to see if there was probably some brain there?
I believe that is called cranial endocasting.
Nice.
I think so.
So they think that this would make a lot of sense if Homo habilis was the first one to talk, because they also often associate Homo habilis as the first one to use tools.
Right.
This is in question, I found.
Oh, really?
Recently, it's to come under question. Ooh. That possibly the oldest tools, the Oldowan tools, which are like scrapers, hammers, mm-hmm. I think...
brain crushers.
Right. Basically, just stone tools that right. are used to like skin meat off a bone. They're like 2.3 million years old. They think that they might be slightly older than Homo habilis.
Wow.
Then the other problem with linking language and humans and Homo habilis is we're not 100% sure we're on habilis's same tree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But nonetheless, Homo habilis does have the cute nickname, a handyman.
I've never heard that either.
Because he was supposedly the first tool users.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's better than Bob the Builder.
Yeah. But there's still that link right there between tool use and language.
Right, which they think makes him and her much more advanced than the Australopithecus,
mm-hmm.
who came before Homo habilis.
Right. So the whole reason why this is important is because they're trying to nail down where language first came about.
Right.
And if you subscribe to Gould and Chomsky, it just... all of a sudden it was there and people were talking to each other.
Yeah, it was like one mutation happened and then all of a sudden people were able to speak.
Yeah, and they were like, oh, man, I've been wanting to get some stuff off my chest for generations.
Right.
If you listen to Pinker and Bloom, or you know what? I feel bad for Bloom. If you listen to Bloom and Pinker.
Sure.
I mean, we know about that, don't we?
Yeah.
If you listen to Bloom and Pinker, then it took... you know, a very long time for language to evolve in gradually
sure.
by putting combinations together. The thing is, Gould, before he died, said, you know what? There is not nearly enough time for language to evolve.
Right.
And what's more, if there was some sort of gradual evolution of language, then chimps should show some sort of propensity toward language.
Chimps, well, they do, though.
They do, but apparently not in any way that any linguist who's sane would call actual language the beginnings of language.
Right. It's communication, but not actual language.
Right, like you mentioned at the beginning of the article.
Sure.
But Bloom and Pinker point out, so chimps and humans diverged mm-hmm. about 6 million years ago.
Right.
That's 300,000 generations for language to evolve. That's plenty of time, they say.
Sure.
And Gould from Beyond the Grave says, no, it's not.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what Pinker actually said about that in his defense was, look at the hyrax, H-Y-R-A-X. It is because people say, well, we share 98% of the DNA. The hyrax shares 98% of the DNA with the African elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a hyrax, it looks like a large rat.
Oh, yeah.
Looks nothing like an elephant. So he's like, just because you share all that DNA doesn't mean that you're going to evolve the exact same way.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
And some people pose, and I sort of agree, that they're not mutually exclusive.
Yes.
You don't have to have one without the other. It may have been acceptation. And then from that point, it may have very much been a matter of natural selection, because the better you were at communicating, the better you were at surviving.
Right.
I like that idea.
I do too. I don't think that, though, if you put Steven Pinker and Noam Chomsky in the same room.
No.
That they would be like, you know, this works together.
Sure.
I think like they're tracing it back to the origin point, the moment where it began, it began to evolve or it just appeared as a result of a incredibly sophisticated machine that just started performing another function.
Yeah.
As a result of its sophistication.
And it's all kind of conjecture anyway.
But there's still support. There's
sure.
support for different ones like brain plasticity, neuroplasticity, the fact that our brains can be restructured and reorganized supports the idea that language evolved gradually, right?
Yeah,
and
true.
It just started to build and build and build. And possibly that's how our brains became larger.
It's right.
The chicken and the egg thing.
But people also say, like, if large brain equals things like speech, then why don't, like, whales and things like that with much larger brains
yeah.
have things like speech?
That's another great argument, too. And then mirror neurons kind of lend support to the idea that it's just a spandrel of brain function, because tool making mm-hmm. and speech both use the same areas, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then both and then tool making lights up when you watch somebody use tools and when you're using tools yourself in the Broca's area.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Our old friends, the mirror neurons.
Yeah, they're back.
You got anything else? I bet you do. There's a lot of scribbling over there.
Oh, yeah. So one of Chomsky's big points is that that grammar or that language is innate, which makes it biological, not cultural.
Okay.
Is universal grammar, which is that, like, if he always says that if a Martian anthropologist came down and studied all human languages, he would reasonably conclude that all of that information is based on an internal structure rather than culture, basically. And the key to universal grammar supposedly is recursion, which is like me saying, like, I'm going to go to the store, the one down the street, you know, the one that has the really good hot dogs. I'll be back in a little bit. It's taking, it's adding phrases within phrases.
Right.
There's no other communication in any animal species that would include this, which makes that human, and supposedly all human languages contain recursion, except there's a challenger now called Paraha.
What's that?
Amazonian. There's like 500 people who speak it.
Really?
501, including the one MIT-trained linguist who studied it for 30 years and is the only one
wow.
who knows it, who's now saying, this thing, they don't have recursion, so universal grammar is wrong. Therefore, Chomsky's whole thing is wrong. There's a pretty cool article on it on Chronicle of Higher Education that's worth reading called Angry Words.
Are they trying to save that language? Because, you know, that's a big deal right now is disappearing languages. And
I think these people are, as far as I got from the article, they seem like they are fine. There's not that many of them, but
right.
they're not being encroached upon any further. I think they're protected.
Interesting.
And they're just kind of living out their existence and doing their thing.
Actually, Noam Chomsky is in the bushes behind them with the blowgun.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, if you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Well, that's it. That's all I got.
That's good stuff. This could have been like 10 hours long.
Yeah, easy.
For linguists out there, they're like, oh, what a broad overview. That's exactly what this is.
They're like, bleh. If you want to learn more and you want to see this picture of Ringo Starr dressed as a caveman, you should read the article written by one Charles W. Bryant called How Did Language Evolve? Type that into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it will bring it up. And I said search bar, so it's time for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this We Saved Another Life, apparently.
Again.
Hey, guys, and Jerry. I thought I would, we'll say hey, Matt, since Matt's here today.
Yeah, hey, Matt.
I thought I would tell you a little about how your podcast has quite literally saved and changed my life. I'm 17 and live in a small town of Galesburg, Illinois, but consider myself a citizen of the world. From when I was 6 months young, 10 years after Ghostbusters.
Nice.
My family and I have traveled back and forth from Illinois to Barcelona, Spain every 2 years.
Cool.
This last time back in the U.S., I fell in love with your podcast and have listened almost religiously every morning for almost 3 years. Then one day, my faith was solidified. While listening and walking my dog, Cheepy, across the street, I should probably COA, walking... This guy's really hitting all the points
like
here.
This guy.
Walking with headphones is a dangerous thing. If one of you died because of a headphone walking incident, I would never forgive myself. Back to the story. A car was unbeknownst to me hurtling down the street at me. I started crossing when all of a sudden, buzz, how flies work, had just begun. Remember the loud buzz?
Mm-hmm.
It really flipped me out, and I jumped backwards just as the car flew by me.
Oh, no, it was from the fly, remember? Help me.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And he said that scared him enough to jump back and didn't even see the car.
Wow.
So we saved this dude and Cheapy, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
That was a while ago, but recently, actually 2 days ago, you have changed the course of the rest of my life. After listening to the sauna and Viking podcasts, I have fallen in love with Scandinavia, so much so that I'm going to be a foreign exchange student in Finland for the entirety of next year.
That's awesome.
So we inspired Noah to go to Finland because of the sauna and Viking cast.
Enjoy the lily.
So much love and many thanks, and that's from Noah F. F.
Nice. Noah Finster Finkelstein. That's his name now.
It is.
Thanks for that, Noah. We're glad you're alive. We hope you have a very good time in Finland. And we're glad Cheapy's doing well, too.
I bet Noah never comes back.
Like in a sinister way? Or
no, I bet he loves it so much that he's
gotcha.
I'm here.
Nice.
Yeah.
Until winter hits.
Yeah, exactly.
We always love hearing how we've saved your life or enriched your life or something like that. We want to hear about it. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can email us directly, just between us and like five other people who are included on the email, at stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.